all of those things, just plugging in and connecting to their Judaism more. And that really did help people. That was like a very helpful framework, you know, because people are looking for a plan, for something to do, for a way to channel their feelings. And Baruch Hashem, like I said, our students and Jews in general have been channeling our emotions, which are loaded, in generally, you know, overwhelmingly in with positivity and love and you know, peace in a peaceful way. But still, we want to make sure that we're channeling those feelings and doing something with them.
Hi, I'm Alex Fletcher.
And I'm Rivki Silver.
And this is Deep, Meaningful Conversations, powered by Town Appliance.
Alex and I wear a lot of hats.
We're both writers.
And speakers.
And so many other things, mothers, wives, friends, and active community members.
We love using our skill sets to bring you the best guests to share their wisdom, perspective, and advice on relevant topics.
And we love schmoozing about the topics that are on our mind, and hopefully yours too. Like one listener said, DMC is like hanging out with friends for coffee and talking about the stuff we're all thinking about.
So whatever you're doing while listening to our podcast, thanks for joining us for a DMC. If you're a frequent listener of DMC, you've heard the lowdown about our yearly sponsor, Town Appliance. This company has your needs as a home shopper at the forefront, and that means everything when you need to make the right and best decision when purchasing a home appliance. You want to do it right the first time, whether it's a refrigerator, washer, or dryer, or something else. These are appliances that get lots of use, as you know, and so it's helpful to have customer service that understands your needs and walks you through all your options. As we like to say on DMC, the next time you're in the market for a new home appliance, think Town Appliance, the obvious choice. If you're in the vicinity of Lakewood, Baltimore, or Cedarhurst, visit their state-of-the-art showrooms, or you can get the same excellent customer service they're known for over the phone. Please visit our show notes for the link to the website and contact information.
Amudim is our sponsor for this episode of DMC. Amudim is there for Am Yisrael in times of crisis. You may be familiar with Amudim's work with addiction, abuse, mental health challenges. Amudim is one of those organizations that stands on the front lines every day, supporting victims and their families and stepping up in the face of unfathomable pain and unrelenting challenges. Amudim responds to crisis by standing taller, reaching deeper, and uniting stronger. So of course, when the crisis in Israel began, Amudim stepped up to the front lines, as they always do. And Amudim has been fielding close to 300 calls a day pertaining to mental health crises since the war began.
Wow.
It's like a whole nother level of crisis support that they've been involved in. Amudim is committed to its vision that every person facing a crisis has a place to turn for kindness, compassion, support, and dignity. So we want to take a stand with Amudim for Am Yisrael now more than ever. Amudim is there for Klal Yisrael in Israel and worldwide during these times of crisis. You need to know that on December 17th and 18th, for 36 hours, you can stand together with Amudim during their Stand United campaign and support the work of their vital organization for Klal Yisrael. So visit unitetoheal.com for their signature 36-hour worldwide live stream event where you'll stand shoulder to shoulder with top leaders and entertainers and the entire Am Yisrael. Amudim's work has never been more vital. Your support will allow us all to heal from our collective trauma. You'll find the link for Unite to Heal in our show notes where you can learn more information about this crucial campaign and make your donation.
We are so glad that you've joined us for another episode of DMC. We are a little curious. Since October 7th, have you been listening to more podcasts, less podcasts? Has it stayed about the same? And if you're still listening to podcasts, which obviously you are because you're listening to us right now, but we were just like wondering if you are trying to listen to content that is specifically about the war, the Matzav, and Eretz Yisrael, or do you need something entirely different to keep your mind off of it?
Yeah, I'm wondering about that too. And we'd love to hear from you. So please shoot us an email at dmcthepodcast@gmail.com, or you can message us on social media to let us know. I think you can sort of look at podcasts as entertainment or sources of information or sources of inspiration, maybe all of the above. You know, I think I sort of have my different lineup of podcasts when I'm in the mood for you know, something specific.
Totally.
And I think also, you know, like how we're consuming information as well as selecting our entertainment has changed so much, you know, in the last 6 weeks or so. And, you know, maybe DMC is your chance to have some me time in the car and you're getting a dose of entertainment, inspiration, information all in one. You know, we hope that's the case.
Definitely. You know, we're planning our fourth season of this podcast, releasing in January 2024. And so we're trying to line up our guests and our topics that we want to address and trying to find that right balance to give, you know, each of you everything that you're looking for in a podcast. And although obviously we're not going to necessarily hit it right for each and every one of our listeners in every episode, because that is impossible, but we do try. We do think about you very much as we're planning our content, and we are trying to offer something for everyone here on DMC. So if you have any guest recommendations or topic ideas, you can also email them to us while you are at it.
Okay, great. Yeah, we're expecting a bunch of emails and DMs. We really do take your feedback seriously, so we'd love to hear your recommendations. Okay, so today's topic sounds intense because it is intense and a very serious issue, and that is being Jewish on secular college campuses today. We're all very aware of the frightening reality facing Jewish students. You know, the stories are horrifying and, quite frankly, unbelievable in 2023. We also want this episode to be somewhat uplifting as well, and that's why we've invited Marielle Goldstein to speak with us. So Marielle is the Director of Women's Education at Maor Maryland, a campus-based organization dedicated to extending Jewish learning opportunities to the broadest spectrum of Jewish students at the University of Maryland College Park. University of Maryland College Park is the fourth largest public university by Jewish population. So according to Hillel, there are 6,000 Jewish students on campus. Wow. That's 20% of the student population.
Wow. That's enormous.
It is. And also they have a very strong Orthodox community. The Orthodox Jewish community at Maryland is one of the largest collegiate communities in the United States.
Amazing. Marielle attended Mechlela and then earned her BS in biology at Stern College for Women and then a BS in nursing at NYU. Marielle has since worked as a pediatric nurse at Baltimore Sinai Hospital and at Camp Simcha, and she also organizes lectures and mentors for many Jewish education initiatives. Marielle balances learning with students on campus and also creating women's programming at Maor with being a wife to Rabbi Zalman and a mother to her six children.
We're really curious to hear Marielle's thoughts on the issue of rising anti-Semitism on college campuses, also about, you know, what Jewish life is like on her campus, how anti-Semitism is impacting her students at the University of Maryland. Also wondering, you know, if there's been a revival of sorts of Jewish pride on campus and if that's translating into more involvement with the programming she and her team at Maor are providing. I know Marielle has been extremely busy. Pinning her down for this interview was no small feat, so we're really looking forward to hearing what's been going on. We hope you enjoy this episode of DMC with Marielle Goldstein.
Hi, Marielle. We are so glad that you can join us today on DMC. Could you please start off by telling us about Maor and about the work that you do at the University of Maryland?
Sure. So it's a pleasure and an honor to join you guys, you ladies. So I am at University of Maryland, part of the Maor Maryland team. Baruch Hashem, we have a fantastic team. My husband and I have been there for 12 years now. We joined the team after moving back from Eretz Yisrael and call it my leave of absence. The dream to be back is alive and well, but we are very, very fortunate and blessed to be part of our local team and then part of this larger Maor family, which is just a really special organization, and the style of Kirov, the approach, really resonates with the way that I like to reach out to our fellow Jews and help share Torah and mitzvos. Maor is on about 20 campuses around the country, so that's really incredible. On certain big state university campuses like Maryland and Rutgers, where you have a really big population of Jewish students, and then on a lot of Ivy League campuses also. They're at Harvard, at Penn, at Cornell, Ivies, non-Ivies, but a lot of, you know, really solid campuses and campuses, obviously, where there's a sizable Jewish population. At Maryland, we have, the numbers are usually said to be 20% of the population is Jewish. So when you think about what that looks like out of a group of 30,000 students, it's a lot of Jews. It's a lot of Jews to work with, which is why we expanded our team, and we want to have a farther reach. And Yeah, and then in terms of the work that I'm actually doing, what we are doing locally, we offer like an array of programs. We actually just had last night our Maimonides graduation, which is like our beginner level program. Actually, it used to be our beginner level program, but at this point, we actually have even more beginner level programs than that. So we have things like freshman fellowships to get freshmen involved, just on the right when they get to campus, to help them create a Jewish community. But we kind of go light on the learning and you know, the food and trying to help them create like a community right at the beginning, so that they get their, you know, themselves connected with us, and we get ourselves connected with them. And then when they are a little bit more, you know, adjusted to their college experience, it's a better time for them to get more involved with us, you know, kind of in their sophomore year with more learning. But obviously everybody's different, and each of our students is a yachid, right? So if somebody calls for more involvement earlier on, we're obviously very happy to have them involved. But we had this graduation from Maimonides program last night. Baruch Hashem had a huge group. We had a very, very large cohort for this past semester. So that was really beautiful. And then we have Maimonides 2 programs to help them continue with their learning. We have things on campus called J groups, which is like part of, more or less part of Olami. So J groups it's helpful for recruiting. And it also is another way of helping students get connected with other students who are interested in the same field. So we have things like J biz, J health, J law, J tech. They're starting on certain campuses. And then they have programs for each of those groups so that they start to get involved with us, but you know, it's really not so much on Jewish learning at that point, but you know, just little bits and meeting people from the community who are involved in those professions. So meeting role models. And so those are just, you know, different programs that we have going on. We have trips. Trips are huge. Anybody who's involved in trying to help, you know, Jewish students get closer to Yiddishkeit knows that trips are crucial. Unfortunately, obviously, we've had to redirect this winter. There are still trips going on, but they're certainly limited. So there's more stateside trips going on, but we have trips to Israel usually. My husband's going to Poland, Eretz Hashem, what we're up to now, but he's been there a bunch. He sent me 1 year. He told me he'd stay back with the kids, so I got to go. Wow. So that's coming up, and I think that trip is as important as ever. I mean, it's always important, mm-hmm. but I think that, like, you don't need to explain that mm-hmm. this anti-Semitism is not a problem from the past that we just need to make sure we don't forget. It's unfortunately, clearly, all too alive and currently, you know, a big problem. That's some of the programming. We also have regular Shabbos meals going on campus. So we take turns with the other couples involved, but mostly at this point, this new young couple, Friedmans, are there more often. And then we kind of swap out us, the Goldsteins and the Koretskis. We'll, you know, swap out a little bit over the course of the semester. But while they're on campus, we often are running Shabbatons in town. If it's a big Shabbaton, then the whole team is on, you know, all hands on deck. If it's one of our many makeup Shabbatons, because we try to be as accommodating as possible so that the students have as many opportunities as possible to be involved. So we have one of our many makeup Shabbatons this week. And so we're in town for that. And just multiple small groups, you know, about 10 students coming for something like that. Again, just as many touches as you can have, and especially the experiential opportunities are huge. So on Sunday, we have our third Maor wedding. We take students to a wedding every semester so they can experience a traditional Jewish wedding. Amazing. And it's amazing. It's really amazing. The best weddings to take them to are our alumni, you know, so because the student and the alumni themselves who have been through this system remember having gone to a wedding and how impactful it was. And then they also are so happy to have the students who are attending really involved. If it's not one of our alumni, then we know we're not, like, we call ourselves professional wedding crashers, but we have full permission, and Rabbi Koretsky already arranges in advance with the caterer. So it's no expense to the host family, but we basically get to teach them about the wedding and show them in real time. You know, you can talk and talk about Shabbos, but it's not like experiencing Shabbos. Right. And you could tell them about the beauty of the wedding and the traditions, but when they're dancing and having a great time with a mechitza, you know, and you're not telling them that it's possible, but they're experiencing that. So
yeah.
Obviously, we know actions speak louder than words. So, and then personally, just what I'm doing during the week is I'm on campus having one-on-one meetings, learning with students any topic of their choice. So that's usually happening with students after they've done Maimonides. But, you know, again, there are some students that are in that beginner level program and say, oh, I'd already be interested in having a one-on-one, but usually not. Usually they realize that they might be interested after going through the program. That's just a really nice opportunity. A lot of, you know, time is spent on building the relationship, which is so important. And whatever we're learning is usually just a springboard for further conversation and, you know, connecting with each other. So
amazing.
And you live in Silver Spring, so you're commuting, right? Into College Park.
Commuting, not such a big commute though. I guess 20 minutes isn't too bad.
That's so, like a Cleveland level commute.
I know when people talk about the commute, and being that I'm from like New York and New Jersey, a commute is 45 minutes to an hour. Exactly. So, you know.
Okay, yeah. Amazing. All right. Well, we've brought you in, of course, DMC, to talk about, you know, your experiences on campus. You're in a very largely populated, you know, Jewish populated campus. Let's talk about the impacts October 7th has had on the lives of the Jewish students that you're working with.
Huge. It's had a huge impact on the students and on all of us, you know. So there are events that happen in life that have a greater impact on sometimes the students or maybe people of another a generation or the staff and not the students. You know, I talked to the students about 9/11. I realized that they were babies, if that. This is obviously something that affects all of us. This is just a sweet anecdote, but as I was commenting in the kitchen, you know, about as I was preparing something for Shabbos or cooking for some, maybe for Shabbos on campus, and my five-year-old was near me, and I was just, you know, we forget even, this is, we're all consumed with this, talking about this all the time, so we have to remember what to say when and who's exposed to our comments. But I commented, this is like the biggest thing that's happened in my life. And my five-year-old said, me too, this is the biggest thing that's happened in my life. but it's from me down to her, and really I think I think that any Jewish person really, and we've all been through a lot of things in our lives, and some of us have been through our own personal losses, which are significant, but this is another level. And I was in Eretz Yisrael on multiple occasions when there were different, you know, intifadas and bus bombings and things like that. But again, this is another level. So I would say that this universally is affecting the students and the staff and everybody at the same time. The impact has been, I'll address it, I guess, on multiple levels. You know, there's the students just feeling so connected to what happened, to each other, to their Judaism. Yeah, there are those who are already feeling that, but this had just such a far-reaching effect, such a deeply reaching effect on people connecting to being a Jew. And for some people, they're feeling that on a ruchnius level, you know, like it's having a spiritual impact. For some people, that's impacting them, you know, just, you know, like their, you know, Jewish pride, or, you know, like politically, you know, like it's having an effect on multiple levels. It was interesting because at the beginning, the first week, Olami arranged for us to have a talk with Rav Asher Weishlita. He is a posek for Olami, and he does regular Q&As for us. He does them in English for the English-speaking Makarvim, and then he does them in Hebrew. And we're, you know, so fortunate. And he is not just obviously a big Talmud Chacham, but he knows what's going on. I think he's also the posek for Shari Tzedek. And anyway, he commented, he was just going through what happened. It was a very emotional conversation. And towards the end of the conversation, people asked a couple of questions. And one of which was, how do we address as Makarvim what happens with the students who maybe don't have their emunah and bitachon, you know, developed, that's not a muscle that's been developed so much yet. And his response was validating because it was the approach that I had been taking for those few days, you know, at that point, which was focusing on the achdus, you know, to talk about like, this is Yad Hashem and, you know, or any of that. I'm not even talking about providing explanations. That's not anything for any of us to do. But I'm saying, even appreciating that this was, Hashem is with us. You know, I commented, you know, again, my little one keeps overhearing things and she'll chime in. I was saying to a student, you know, we don't believe that Hashem, God, whatever I was saying, fell asleep for any moment of this, you know. And my daughter said, no, Hashem doesn't sleep. We know Hashem doesn't fall asleep. Mm-hmm. And I think that, again, the reason I'm mentioning that is because our children, Baruch Hashem, are raised with from a very young age to know that Hashem that doesn't slumber and doesn't sleep. And that's something beautiful that we have the opportunity to raise our children with, that it's a fact. It's not, you know, but that's also something that sometimes we need to help people at a later stage in life acquire that emuna pshuta, and it might not necessarily even be, you know, acquired as an emuna pshuta, because they need to process it in a more, you know, intellectual level at that point in their life. The achdus piece to me was very, very powerful, helping students and really, I guess, listening to them realize how connected they felt. Mm. We talk, you know, the Mefarshim and Rabbanim, we talk forever about the fact that the whole body, Klal Yisrael, is one body, right? And if one part of the body is ailing or there's an injury, that the whole body is affected, right? But do we always feel that way? You know, we some of us do, I hope, but sometimes, you know, these events happen and then we really feel it more. And I think that it was just a big wake up call for a lot of people to realize that, like, in real time, like it was like a visceral, they like felt it. Like it actually felt like something happened and it didn't make a difference for the first time in a long time. It didn't make a difference where you aligned yourself, what was on your head or what wasn't, with tzitzis or not tzitzis. You know, like, I think that this was a big deal. And unfortunately, there have been divides over the years, and Baruch Hashem, you know, we are not focusing on that now because we're focusing on the unbelievable achdus, and that's really just what we need to be focusing on. But, and that too, that's even something that I was able to, like, kind of share that message, that over the course of our history, right, you know, I tell them, like, the Purim story, the light version, you know, we're not up to Purim yet, so it's like we'd be getting ahead of ourselves to really go too deeply into Purim. But I touch on the beginning of the Megillah and say, you know, how Haman went to Ahasuerus and talked about an Am Mefuzar Mefurad, and how it's bad news for the Jews throughout history when we have discord, and that when we merit salvation, we need that achdus, and that's really what brings it about. And Rav Asher Weiss even commented about this on his talk with us, that, you know, there are times in our history where there was, where we were successful in war, even though we were serving Avodah Zarah, but we had achdus. Mm-hmm. And wow. So that was just, I think, that's a very powerful message also for the students to hear, because, you know, they're not necessarily as attached to Torah and mitzvos yet, Meretz Hashem, they will be, as, you know, with time. But I think that that is also just an important piece, and helping people feel like a part of this bigger family that we really are a part of. You know, it's like chas v'shalom, if somebody feels estranged from family, which people could feel, you know, people, you know, sometimes do see themselves as being othered. Anyway, so I think that that was very powerful, that aspect, and vulnerable. The students definitely felt afraid, and are feeling a fear that they haven't experienced. Hmm. And they didn't necessarily experience that right away. I mean, they felt shaken by what happened, but then they assumed that it would have been appropriately handled, because didn't we all? Because did any of us think that, like, the world would, you know, turn their backs on us again? I mean, obviously it's not everybody, but, like, the amount of people that are taking the other side is, it's just shocking. I mean, there's really no words. And I think that the initial response from the university, there was one letter that went out, which was didn't strongly condemn what happened. And then there was a lot of disappointment in that. And then a second letter went out, which was more strongly condemned what happened, and even offered, you know, understanding to the students if they needed some extensions with their work or things like that. I mean, in between the two letters, and I was meeting with students, and that first week, October maybe 9th or whatever it was, you know, the kids had offered Isru Chag, so there was a day where a lot of us got to just collect ourselves in our own zones in our home, or try to.
Yeah.
But the students couldn't function. Mm. You know, people weren't sleeping. Students are telling me I'm sweating at night. I'm having anxiety attacks. Oh, I cannot do my work. I can't. And I said that the university needs to handle this.
Wow.
You know, I don't want to get political, but, you know, when when a lot of students wanted a certain, you know, wanted the elections to go a certain direction, and in a previous presidential election, and it didn't go that way, oh, the university provided puppies and safe spaces and coloring pages and all of this stuff, right? But there was a massacre on October 7th. And so, I mean, I'm not making this up. The things that universities did to accommodate students' reaction to
an election, a Democratic election, right.
And so the university did make some accommodations if people need an extension, but I even asked students the following week, you know, if that was still in place. And the students were finding that sensitivity, that empathy, was kind of expiring. Mm. And by now, I think that it either fully expired or, you know, I'm saying it's at this point, it's like wherever the professors align themselves, I think it's kind of, you know, the students are being treated kind of as such.
And it wasn't really empathy. It was like forced empathy, you know, which is not really empathy.
Yeah. Oh, right. Well, look, Maryland has a lot of Jews. Right. Maryland has a lot of Jewish students. So they needed to, you know, I'd like to think that it came from the right place, but they also, you know, they may well have been making certain statements because they needed to. They did send out a letter, actually, to students who were studying in Israel, which I just thought was...
Studying abroad, like gap year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know of any other universities that did this. It could be that they did, and I'm just not aware. But this was, I just thought, a very nice move on their part. They basically had sent a letter to students who were studying abroad, students in Eretz Yisrael, like saying, you're, you know, already part of the Maryland family and you're Jewish Terps. Terps are like the name for, you know, what Maryland calls their students. And we're just offering you support and so on. Now, they didn't have to do that. You know, I thought that was like a considerate move on their part to send a message like that and just say, you know, we're thinking about you, whether you're serving. You might, you know, they realize that we have students on campus that served in the IDF. So they did do that. And
that is nice.
And again, so there was like this initial letter that was not as strong as it should have been. Then there's the second letter that expressed stronger condemnation you know, and letting the students know that the university was there to support them. And then this other letter. Okay. And at that point, things seemed to be like, those of us at University of Maryland were feeling very grateful that we're at a university that is handling this fairly well and much better than other places. You know, I'd say, honestly, things kind of went downhill from there. I'm not saying that we have going on our campus what they have going on at Harvard, Cornell, Penn, Cooper Union, right? None of our students, to my knowledge, have needed to be locked into a library to keep them safe. None of our students have been physically, you know, attacked, to my knowledge. Again, we don't know if there's, you know, people coming close, you know, coming near somebody at a rally, which feels like taunting. I know that some of our students were yelled at, like, up close in their face, which is very unpleasant, obviously, and does make people feel intimidated. I'm pretty certain, as much as I can, obviously I can't say 100%, but I don't believe any of our students, when I say our, there's Ma'or, but there's also just the Jewish population in Maryland. The response is peaceful. And this isn't just on our campus. This is just the general Jewish response on campuses and in the U.S. and around the world. There's obviously, I don't need to say, but there's a huge difference between our rallies and their protests. Right. I'm not even sure if they're having any rallies. I think theirs are all protests and ours are rallies. Now, I understand it's because they feel that they're under attack and we're, you know, Israel is attacking them, but it's just because they forgot that they started this somehow. but you know, it's so bizarre, you know, like that, because we don't need to protest because we're attacking, but we're really just responding. You know, the Israel Defense Forces, the name really says it all.
This is what I keep telling people. Exactly. Like it's literally in the name. Literally in the name.
I didn't even think about
that. Defense Force.
Yeah. It's interesting. So interesting. Yeah. I never thought
about
that.
Don't start out. This is not, right? I thought about, I was thinking, this is not the Israeli army. They are there to defend and keep our people safe. They're not on the offensive.
Right.
We're just trying to.
We've had so many defensive wars. Yeah. It's just like, this is just how it is. It's just like, this is like, I was thinking like, this is how it's gone for like 75 years. This is just always how it's been. Like literally. So, okay. But people forget because people have like the memory of a goldfish.
Or never learned it in the first place.
Or don't care to, you know. Right. Have you seen that this has worked, like impacted the type of work that you've been doing with your students at all? And also just I know we were talking a little bit before the interview started about how our lives have all been changed and how our ability to function has been changed. So can you talk a little bit about how maybe your work has changed with your students since October 7th and just like generally, you know, how your life itself has also been changed?
So like we were talking about before, I do feel like the level of intensity is high and feels pretty constant. I know that other people feel that way as well, just from the people I'm speaking to. It could be that, you know, people share company with people who are like-minded, and I feel extremely connected to Eretz Yisrael. I feel very proud that we have our oldest daughter in seminary there this year. So, you know, when people asked if we had any thoughts of bringing her home, I said, not unless she feels uncomfortable. Otherwise, I feel very proud that I have, that part of me is there, because I'd like to be there. There's just definitely like this, like I said, this intensity that's always going on. Many of us are constantly checking the news or frequently checking the news, and whether we're getting the, you know, the actual war updates or also enjoying the invigorating warm Achdus posts of, you know, or soldiers returning home to see their families. But there's just this, it's constant. And I think that there's, that affects people, you know, so I think that it makes people feel very connected to what's going on, and it can be overwhelming at times. And I think that that's, I think how a lot of people in, you know, in the firm community are experiencing this, but it's also affecting people who wouldn't have necessarily been as on top of Israel news. You know, like there were attacks that would take place here and there, and usually more than that, you know, like unfortunately what took place this morning, right, in Yerushalayim. So that's not something that would necessarily be on somebody's radar if they weren't otherwise following news in Israel, right? It would be on our radar, but it might not be on somebody else's radar, but now it is. And that's, you know, that's because Eretz Yisrael's in the spotlight. You open up the news, you know, like it's front and center, right? This little tiny country the size of New Jersey. We know that it's always in the news more than other places, but it's been consistently, it's been consistent. So that said, so that's, you know, spills over into the conversations that we're having, into the programming that we're doing. We certainly adjusted our Maimonides curriculum, you know, based on what was going on. And the guest speakers that we had an Israel activist speaker come who was wonderful. We wrote letters to soldiers. We did a lot of the things that people are doing, but it doesn't feel repetitive because it's important that each of us are doing these things, right? The same way that the Tehillim, right? Is saying Tehillim repetitive? Of course not. We all say them again and again, and we should be, and we need to be, and writing those letters and advocating to our local congressmen. All of that is so important. So I think that writing the letters to the soldiers also, a student actually just showed me last night that she heard back from her from soldiers. She included on her letter, her WhatsApp, and I have it. It's such a sweet thing. She said, I got a message and from a number I didn't recognize, I opened it up and it was soldiers saying, thank you, Sydney, for your letter. So they wrote back to her.
That's amazing.
And and we've heard from so many people that the letters really make a difference. So I think a lot of us saw that post of like the tank with like the,
covered in the letters
taped to the tank. Mm-hmm. Or there's that other story that went around like viral, the soldier and Emma Platt, that soldier who had that letter tucked into his vest when he was, and that it really was mechazek him. So we did the letters. We participated together with Chabad. We did like some, you know, a group thing, packing duffels with some supplies. We've sang with the students, you know, we've showed videos of some of our students that are there. We're in yeshiva, serving in the army. You know, it's very powerful for them to feel connected to their fellow Maryland students or alumni, because it does, again, it feels like an extended family. We actually, my husband, who organizes like a lot of the educational pieces, thought to do something which I thought was beautiful, to include the students and teach them more about our history, you know, vis-a-vis what's going on. You know, just talk to them about the avos. Ma'asa avos siman labanim. We know certain things that our forefathers, right, that our avos and imaos went through, and that creates a certain like spiritual genetics that we can access and channel, you know. So the fact that they went through certain nisyonos and being able to connect with that. Now, we weren't going to give them like a full-blown history lesson, but we did try to just give them, you know, just some pointers for them to realize, especially with these current partios just full of stories. And then the second part of that program was doing family trees. So a lot of times part of our program is like discussion. And then the other part is like an activity or a guest speaker. You know, we like to just break up the 2 hours so that it's engaging for them. So there's the discussion piece, and the students really enjoy that, that we can all bounce ideas around each other and hear each other and share their own, you know, opinions on things. But I, it was the pictures of the students working on their family trees were so special. You know, you had just tons of them on the phone. They're calling their bubbies, calling grandma. And I just thought that was such a nice twist on what's going on. Again, just connecting to our heritage.
Yeah.
Right. Because this is our land, right? We are the indigenous people of Eretz Israel. So, and then we took the students to the rally, which was so special.
Yeah.
We kind of took them, I say in quotes, in a different way, because a lot of campuses came with the students on a bus and they needed to stay together. Mm-hmm. Because we're so close by, we're metro ride or really two, whatever, we didn't stay together with them the entire time. We gathered together at our Maor house, and the students came in the morning. They got these special blue bracelets that we had access to. They grabbed bagels if they wanted, right? We were very Jewish about it. And we had signs for them to collect. We actually also had keychains. I was trying to help them feel more safe, so we ordered keychains that have like an earth, you know, like a really disturbing alarm, so that if they felt threatened at any point, they could just push the button and, you know, at least alarm people. But they came and collected those things, and then, you know, the students went in groups onto the metro, and then us, our staff together also went. Myself, my husband, the Friedman's Rabbi Koretsky, who runs our campus, who would be the person who would enjoy such a program. Alex knows that would be something that would be up his alley, was doing something incredibly special. Special is an understatement. He was donating a kidney that day in Florida.
Oh my gosh.
So it was like this, we felt just that there was like a lot of emotion on our campus that day, because what greater thing can you be doing? I mean, for a fellow Jew, right? For another person, literally saving someone's life. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, as a group, we were trying to get out there and also, you know, just show our support and advocate. And so that was kind of what was going on in our own little bubble on that day. And we got out there, and I would say probably 100 students passed through our house that morning just to collect items, collect bracelets. So that was meaningful, just to feel that connection, that impact. And you know, being out there, and we know from the students, their feeling being out there, their Jewish pride, their connection to their fellow Jew that day was really, really powerful for them. I shared with Alex that my husband and my son actually got caught by the media. We're standing right behind the media, so they were actually featured on Fox 5 and on ABC.
Amazing.
That was a surprise. I was getting all these messages from people that, you know, did you see this? Did you see this? So there's this sweet picture of my son with his, you know, holding up a sign and his payas, and then my husband's in the middle of chanting something, probably bring them home or whatever. But it was a very powerful experience. And then we debriefed about it with the students at our program that week. And the students who came were very empowered and excited to talk about it. Some students didn't come because their parents were concerned. They felt uncomfortable. And that's all valid, you know, and work, you know, lots of things. But there was a lot of people who came. But obviously, as we know, there was a lot of people who didn't come. And so, but we all, again, there's so many things for people to be doing. And, you know, just, you know, it's special, the ability for people to, and the students, the action is really, really important, you know. And
yeah.
I just want to tell you that Rifki and I were standing next to each other right there also, probably close to your husband, right by the media boxes as well. It was a great spot to be in.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was
good.
But really we couldn't have talked because there was no connection.
No.
I know. The whole time. Oh, my gosh.
We're so grateful to Town Appliance for being our yearly sponsor for this season of Deep Meaningful Conversations. So when you're in the market for a new, small, or large home appliance, think Town Appliance. They're known for their superior customer service tailored for the from customer. You can shop online, and nationwide shipping is free for orders over $1,000. You can also visit one of their beautiful showrooms in Baltimore, Lakewood, or Cedarhurst. Town Appliance offers a non-minimum free delivery option, which is available in certain areas. So how to figure out if you qualify, you just enter your zip code on the product page or during checkout on their website to see if you're eligible. And if you're not, Town Appliance charges a $99 flat rate delivery charge. You can find the link to their website and their contact information in our show notes.
When you think about the organizations in the Jewish world that support mental health, addiction, challenges, and abuse, Amudim is one of the first to come to mind. They are literally on the front lines saving lives every single day. And not surprisingly, the work has only intensified due to the war in Israel. They jumped to action, not only fielding over 300 crisis calls since the war began, but also initiating various humanitarian efforts that focus on mental health services. One initiative is mental health support for Americans in Israel. Amudim recognizes the profound impact of the current situation on mental health. Amudim has allocated approximately $80,000 a week to provide, that's, wow, staggering, to provide therapy sessions specifically tailored to English speakers in Israel. Their efforts are particularly concentrated on supporting gap year students and lone soldiers, individuals whose primary language is English and who are in dire need of mental health services right now. Also, in collaboration with Simha, Amudim is offering 3 virtual therapy sessions per Anglo and Israeli student. This initiative aims to provide crucial emotional and psychological support to the students and Anglos facing the challenges of this ongoing conflict. We will tell you more about the important work they're doing later on in the episode, but please take a stand for mental health with Amudim and contribute to their Stand United campaign. It's December 17th and December 18th. You will see the link in our show notes. Don't miss out on this.
Okay, well, Mariel, thank you for giving us an insight into this light, into what's going on in your life and your work. And it's just so interesting because, you could be working in any profession that's not involved in the Jewish community, and there is sort of, a distinction. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I'm going to work. I know that you're a nurse also, so, you could probably – are you practicing now?
So I split my time. I mean, mm-hmm. during the year, I just pick up usually, a few shifts a month. I work per diem. I actually did take a bit of a leave since October 7th. Mm. I don't know if it was officially marked down in their books, but my nurse manager reached out and very sensitively reached out a couple times and said, "I'm so sorry for what's going on." Mm. And that really was so appreciated because she was the only person who commented. And I kind of said to my husband that I was disappointed. And he said, "Well, you don't work there full time." He said, "It's not you're necessarily on their minds." I said, "Okay, that's fair. I appreciate you reframing that for me," because I it didn't bother me because my feelings were hurt. It bothered me on principle because I feel that people should be reaching out to people that they know that are Jewish the same way that people expect it to be reached out to when there have been other incidents, hashtags going on. And if you didn't, then you were, then you were part of the problem. So all of a sudden it's okay to not. But she reached out a couple times and I told her, I said, I feel very connected to what's going on there. I worked with her back in the day when you and I were at Neighbors, Alex, and back in 2005 before I moved to Israel, and I'm back on the same unit. And so she knows that I lived in Israel. So that's also, and then she knows that my daughter is there. So she's known me for a long time. And so I did kind of take this leave, but I am scheduled for December 25th, a good Jewish nurse would be. Wow. And so I will be back at the hospital for that. And I am curious how people respond, but I split my time. I would say I do a lot of the nursing also in the summer when I work in Camp Simcha. So I am Baruch Hashem. I love what I do and I do what I love. And I'm very fortunate that both of these professions give me tremendous,
That's great.
Inspiration and meaning. The nursing is kind of a little bit more on the side during the year.
Yeah, I guess my point was just very briefly that anyone who's working in the secular world, you have your own challenges in terms of what's going on with October 7th and the response of non-Jews. But when you're working in the Jewish community, it's all coming with you. You don't get a break from this. Your job is to support other students who are going through this, it's got to be very intense. It's always at the forefront of your mind.
Yeah. No, you're 100%. And the truth is, it's comforting. And one of the things that I said to my husband, I said, I can't imagine going back, doing a shift, shortly afterwards. Cause I said, I don't know if I could tolerate being around people who were not going to be talking about what's going on. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't think I could handle that. On the flip side, like you said, working on campus and working with Jewish students, it's constant. And for me, that works, because it's on my mind constantly. And at the same time, it's intense and it is a lot. Initially, that first week, there was just processing. There was people were frozen, myself included in a certain way. But then there was trying to help the students. I would say the week after, there was still a lot of processing and people, just needed to talk and say, oh, this week I'm more functional. But then I was able to, then I said, let's shift and, you know, like learn in the merits of what's going on. Or, you know, we would say the tefillah for the soldiers or do something. I have an alarm that goes off on my phone at 1 o'clock every day. So we could, you know, I say Shema, with, you know, there's like this thing to say Shema with Eretz Yisrael. So if I'm with a student, the alarm goes off, I say, would you like to join me? Or I'm going to just say Shema, you know, like, and to include them on these different programs, on these different projects. We actually, the week after our first Maimonides program, we had to obviously and need and wanted to do something for the students. And my husband put together a beautiful video that included like this, a few interview, you know, a few of our alumni, like I said, and then included also just some footage of like, you know, the beautiful, inspiring things. And I spoke to the students afterwards and I said, you know, please be mindful of what you're exposing yourselves to. And one student said how damaged she felt from seeing some of the things on social media. And I had seen a post and I shared it again. I might have even seen it in your status, Alex, I'm not sure, but there was a post that really said it so well. Two comments, you know, just about how A, watching any of this is participating in the terrorism, right, that you're that they're going for. And B, that it further debases, takes away from any dignity that might be left for, I mean, for any of the people that were exposed in that way. And so, and I said, you know, and the third piece is just that it's personally damaging to our souls, you know, obviously, right. Like, yeah. we need to be careful. Our minds are very powerful. You know, we don't realize that. And, but then we can't get these images out. And I even told students, you can actually pray to help remove images from your minds. You can use prayer for anything. Yeah. But I said, just don't allow yourself to be terrorized. Again, I shared this, you know, this thing that I had seen. And also just for the sake of those who were exposed in that, you know, in that awful way. And so I said to a bunch of students at the end of the program, I commented, I'm seeing so much beauty. I said, my heart is shattered from what's happened. I said, but it's also beating, like bursting with Jewish pride. And I just want you guys all to be able to share that. And that's what's going on with the Jewish people. And if you're not a part of that, I want you to be able to be a part of that. So just let me know if you would like to be bombarded with inspiration and let me know. And I got that night, right after our program, I got a bunch of texts from students saying, bombard me, bombard me, bombard me.
That's beautiful.
So it was beautiful. And then we ended up making, first it was going to just be with this group of sorority girls. And then we realized like more students want this. And we ended up making our own chat called Am Yisrael Chai, and it's only positivity. Great. And the students are loving it. I actually asked a few of the original students, I said, is it too much for you guys? Like, are we overloading? And they said, no, we love it. It keeps us. And we know that if we, whenever we want, we can just look at the chat and we're going to find, you know, positivity there. Great. So.
Great. Beautiful. Okay. So let's shift a little bit and talk about, you know, the rising anti-Semitism on campus. I just did a quick Google search and I saw November 10th, there was an incident at University of Maryland with a protest, Arab protest. And I'd love you to tell us a little bit about that and hear from you, like what the experience has been at University of Maryland in terms of anti-Semitism lately.
So, so that protest was one of the occasions that I think people were really feeling that things had shifted. It wasn't the first occasion, but I think that it was, you know, it really hit people hard, you know, because it wasn't subtle. I went to that protest for just a few minutes because I was curious. And, you know, the area on campus, there was this one area that's quite central for where the students gather or pass through for their classes, right near the, you know, kind of student union built into the stamp. And it was just covered in chalk with anti-Israel, anti-Semitic language. You know, as we've already established, saying things like from the river to the sea is, you know, is a clear call for wiping out Israel. And, you know, Holocaust.
2.0, like Intifada 2.0. I saw Holocaust 2.0.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, also cursing, you know, just you know, lots of, yes, Intifada. One student actually said to me, who is like very pro-Israel and likes to be out there. And I checked in with her afterwards because I had heard that she was really shaken from this. And I said, I heard you were, somebody told me she was crying afterwards. And I knew she's very strong and like, I didn't think things would get to her. She said, just when somebody yelled in her face, Intifada, you know, and It's just that just got to her, you sure. know. And
I don't know how it couldn't. A
yes, of course, right. But thank you. Why wouldn't it? But then people are getting upset with Jewish students going like, "It, you don't have to be so like. Why are you getting so upset? You know, like what does that have to bother you?" There's a town hall meeting that the students organized with the administration. This student I just met with her yesterday for like our weekly learning, and I asked her how that went, and she said it was awful. She said the university was telling us don't be afraid. And she said, well, how am I not supposed to feel afraid if people are yelling in my face to do an intifada? And they said, well, an intifada is a revolution. And she said, that's not, this is what administration was telling
they
me.
They don't know basic history.
And she said, when was the last time an intifada was a revolution? So it's
and can I just say, like, people are so obsessed with this revolution idea. When has a revolution not been bloody and violent and awful? What revolution has been like, oh, exactly. It's daisies
and these are educators, kumbaya. Educated administrators.
Well, that's what's part of what's so disturbing also is I think that those of us who are following what's going on college campuses, and you probably saw the footage of Dr. Phil, you know, he had put something out. Whatever his language was, like the, you know, Ivy League, the Ivy Rot, you know, like which is such a slap in the face is that these institutions that are supposed to be places of enlightenment and even the ones that are more sophisticated, right, are the ones that have been more disturbing, more despicable, more offensive. So there was that event basically on campus. There were just, you know, there's the calls and the chants, and we have the police were there as they've been, you know, on campus in many, you know, for the rallies and the protests. But it's very clear that when they're at these protests, they're there to protect the Jewish students. And when they come to the rallies, they're there to protect the Jewish students.
That's
you know, like it's, a, you know I'm saying, but it's not the other way around. I mean, right. That's not, I don't think that they're worried about, you know, protecting pro-Palestinian students right. from the Jewish students.
Right.
And then right afterwards, after this, you know, event where there was this protest, there was this beautiful vigil in McKeldin Mall, which is this huge open space in Maryland with multiple seats opened up and these red balloons tied and, you know, pictures of the hostages placed, one for each hostage and beautiful. Strollers for the baby. And it was a vigil and there was a moment of silence for all of the hostages. They hadn't yet been releasing them, right? So the numbers have changed a bit, but we have still
so much
too many to go.
So much, yeah.
That just touched on all the returns. So there was just this juxtaposition of like their protest and the anger and the hate and then the vigil and the calm and the peace. It's funny, a student said to me last night, I think of like, I look at the Israeli flag because we have like a flag by the podium, she said, and it just like represents peace to me, the blue and the white. And I said, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking about that recently, that when I look at the Israeli flag, I mean, blue and white, they're peaceful colors, the sky, the clouds, and we were talking about just what the Palestinian flag represents at this point, which is, you know, if you look at it, and she said, it feels hateful. It feels, you know, it's so, so that was certainly a big wake up call, and students were very, very disturbed. And a lot of what's going on at Maryland has been, you know, kind of the Jewish response had been kind of low key. Like it wasn't like at their protest, there was a movement to show up and say, and do something at some other universities. Like if they have a protest, there's like a movement of like, you know, the students should come out and do something. And, you know, there's different reasons for that, you know, like that definitely some of the leadership chose to handle it that way, to just not, you know, kind of be pushing buttons and not to be, you know, looking, you know, we can do our peaceful things, but we don't need to be like up in each other's faces. And but I think that it, you know, that experience and some Jewish students did go on their own volition, and their experience was just so uncomfortable to say the least, and really,
I mean, I can't even like watch these things. Like I get upset like just being from the distance of my phone. I can't like call the chomer. I can't imagine being in the same physical space.
Right. Yeah, 100%. And there's actually one of our students, Karen, who wrote this amazing article I was telling you about that was published in the J Post. It's headline, actually, if anybody wants to look it up. It's called The Abyss Gazes Also Into You.
Send us the link and we'll put it in our show notes.
Sure. It's on our Instagram, and she had worked very hard also on speaking to the administration and having and creating a letter that a lot of people signed on, current students, parents of students, alumni, staff. We've put it out there for people to sign, that was basically calling for the university to have a clear definition of how they define anti-Semitism, right? There's different definitions.
Oh, really?
Okay? I became more educated in this. So
really?
It was a call to comply with the existing anti-discrimination laws that protect Jewish students, including Title VI and EO 138-899. But it was basically asking them to emphatically call on the university to consider the definition of anti-Semitism referenced in the executive order in its entirety. But you need to be clear. Again, these are things that I hadn't really thought about. Like, how do you define anti-Semitism? Right? I thought that it was pretty clear what anti-Semitism was. But in order to call it out and respond to offenses properly and, you know, in a fair way, in a legal way, whatever you want to say, so then it needs to have a clear definition. They established this letter, and they were asking for people to sign on. And, you know, if the university would establish how they clearly define anti-Semitism, what would be, you know, what's considered free speech, what is not considered, right? You know,
right. Like, where's the line between free speech to hate speech, basically?
Mm-hmm. Right, because there's just so much room for what we once thought was hate speech, but is now considered. Just calm down. It's just some free speech. Mm. And then, you know, having an appropriate anti-Semitism task force centered around this order and having the appropriate response. So if something happens, there's a way of responding. There was actually, we had a beautiful Shabbos on campus somewhere, I don't know, since this happened, I can't remember exactly which Shabbos it was, probably a month after, I would say. So students were still feeling obviously very connected, as they still are, but it wasn't raw. And our meals were just so meaningful and quality. And we went around because they weren't too big. You know, we had enough time on our hands to have everybody introduce themselves. And at our meal, we had one student who's friends with a hostage named Omer. Right. So this is, again, this is very personal. Omer from Long Island. We had another student who's involved with something called Terps for Israel. And we had asked the different students as we went around, as they introduced themselves, we asked them to share what they've experienced on campus and what's been positive, how they felt supported. And a lot of people did say different things. I felt supported because of the letter. I felt supported because you know, I went to Poland with Maor and I knew, you know, whatever, all different things. And one student said, we asked the student who's involved with Terps for Israel, we were curious, you know, because at that point we weren't hearing so much, you know, that was upsetting to us, you know, and that there was that much that was hateful going on our campus, you know, in an overt way. And she said, well, there are things going on, but they're also being handled. You know, like there were people taking down posters, but that there was, you know, a swift response, mm-hmm. you know, so people were being arrested or things like that. And I think, again, like, I'm not sure, you know, exactly where that is up to, but they're definitely, the environment is tense. You know, I can't say that there's warm and fuzzy feelings when people with kafiyas are walking near students mm-hmm. that have a Jewish star. And that's a big problem, you know, and students are feeling more and more threatened as I speak to them. And that's just simply not okay. I mean, yeah. Obviously that just, it's like silly for me even to have to say that, but yeah.
Campus is like a microcosm of all of these like geopolitical issues. It's like, it's right in your face, yeah. Right? In college campuses.
It's interesting because, you know, it's people that are 18 to whatever, you know, whether they're undergrads or they're in graduate school, but it's this bubble of life, yeah. Right? It's this time of life where it's like this little world. It's not real. You don't have all the age ranges, but at the same time, people are passionate mm-hmm. about what they believe in. And
they have all this time to go out and do, like all this time, like thinking like, who has time to like constantly be going to protests? Like, I don't even know. Like, do they go to classes? Like, what's going on? Like, you know, I'm
when you
busy.
Have three classes a day, all right? Like, they have no classes.
No, not a joke, by the way. Yeah, our working much harder than them.
Yeah, no, like my 15-year-old or 14-year-old, however old he is, you know.
Oh gosh, no good. That's a no good.
Yeah, no, they look. Some of our students are prioritizing whether it's the rallies or skipping class because they feel that they need to be somewhere, or they, you know. So I mean, and also. Look, there's also the class walkouts, which are somehow supportable. Yeah. Also.
No, I was talking about the other side. I was not talking about our students or our rallies. I was talking about all the other rallies that are like seem like
protests.
These protests. Yeah, I'm sorry. Like I was.
Yeah, no, but yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm saying on the other side, how are they going to all these things? I honestly don't know. But you know, it's important. I guess, you know, from their perspective, it's what they can do. Just the unfortunate thing is that. It's just so hateful. You know, there was this one event, there was some conversation, this also kind of was put on social media, where there was a little conversation that took place between the two sides.
Oh, I saw that.
The student actually who wrote this article was like in the picture that was like going around, you know, and it featured, you know, this idea, this comment that like, you know, being able to have a conversation, which is ideal, you know, if people could, but that was also just a small piece of what was going on over there, you know, like, because there still were hateful comments that were being spewed. So it was, you know, just a small slice of what took place over there. Yeah. And the truth is that people, like I said, like this initial feeling that people were having on campus, our students are very grateful that they're at Maryland, to be clear. Like they do feel like more protected than maybe at other places, but this gratitude that they initially had maybe towards the university for how they were handling things has since, you know, shifted as the university has not been as on top of things as, you know, the hate speech is being dialed up. Now, I don't expect that to change in the near future. This war, you know, how long is this going on for? The death toll is going to rise on the other side, and you know, they're going to be angrier. And so I don't, you know, how the universities do have to figure this out. And you could see also in Congress, they're dealing with whether, you know, they're going to cut off funding in universities, as they should.
Yeah.
You know, if the universities are not able to keep their students safe.
Right. I mean, it's ridiculous. What do you think? I mean, all of this is like just so much to take in. What do you think is the biggest takeaway for Jewish college students from like the current reality?
I mean, a few things. I mean, like we talked about before, the way that it's affecting everybody, you know, like I said, that initial response of like feeling connected to their fellow Jew, I think is an important takeaway for them also, you know, that how connected we are as a people, and to allow themselves to feel that connection, and to just remember, you know, like what's important, and not to go back to the divide. You know, as I said to students, like I've commented that we say never again, right? Or people have commented never again is now, right? A lot of people were sharing those posts, seeing those posts. And when I first saw the posts, you know, maybe October 8th, I started to see it maybe October 9th. I thought that it was a little bit quick to take that approach, you know, to what happens. I just said, like, I'm not sure that we need to, you know, take the never again is now approach to October 7th. Of course, you know, that there needed to be response. But I was a little taken aback that those posts were going around so quickly. But it only took two more days till I switched gears. And then, you know, since then, realized that never again is now is so relevant, right? Because we clearly see that this isn't just anti-Semitism. I'm sorry, that this isn't an anti-Zionism thing, that this is an anti-Semitism issue. And that was also a big wake-up call for students, you know, for people all over the world, right? For people who are super liberal and left-leaning to realize that this is, wait a minute, we need to rethink things a little bit, even if they're going to still maintain certain liberal views. And that's fine. Everyone's entitled to their perspectives. But just to realize that, one second, instead of like having, you know, signing on for the group think to everything that goes along with that, I guess, you know, line of thinking, that camp, maybe to be more nuanced about things. But what I was going to say, though, is that when we say never again, is now I also comment to the students that the world needs to go, no, right? That never again is now. But that we as Jews need to remember never again is now, is that we can't afford to forget what happens when we don't have unity and when we're like, you know, having discord, because we just can't afford to forget that. So that feeling, that profound feeling that we are a big family, I hope that students really take away with them. I think that what does it mean to be a Jew, right? You know, like we talk about people died al Kiddush Hashem. I mean, Nebuch, we are constantly seeing these updates, you know, of another soldier and all of the people from October 7th, you know, but it's hard to wrap our head around those numbers. But, you know, as there's been fatalities, as they're part of the ground invasion, and that sense that we're really all part of this big family. You know, we talk about, like, especially on trips to Poland, that we need, you know, people died al Kiddush Hashem, we need to live al Kiddush Hashem. And what does it mean just to be a Jew? You know, living al Kiddush Hashem is something that we all need to be better about, but just what does it mean to be a Jew? And I think that that's just an important thing for people to think about. You know, I feel so connected to my Judaism, or as our students sometimes say, I feel so Jewish, you know, or when students feel like they haven't been connected, they often say, like they did last night at our graduation, and I've heard it so many times, our kids actually, you know, can do their speeches because they've heard it so many times from the students. I'm not so Jewish, or I haven't been so Jewish. They've been the same amount Jewish the whole time, but that means it's their way of saying I haven't been so connected to my Judaism, right? But that hopefully they do feel this greater connection or drive to be connected or understand what it means to be a Jew. What does that even mean? What is it about? Israel is certainly this important connection, but a student one time said to me that she thought that the connection between all Jews is Israel. And I said, it's actually the Torah. And, you know, it was just like, it was like news to her, you know, because unfortunately she really had such limited backgrounds. And obviously I said in a more educational way and in a way that made more sense, but I'm saying it was in my mind, to her, Israel was this point of connection. So for students to really think about, what does it mean? What does it mean to be a Jew? What does it mean? What does Israel mean? What's our connection to the land? I think that those are important takeaways. What can we do as Jews, you know, wherever we're living, whether we're in Israel on our summer internship programs? You know, a lot of our students do these trips, whether it's Birthright. A lot of our students felt so connected to what was going on because when they do Birthright, they have soldiers that come on their trips and then they're serving now. And they did, a bunch of our students were in Eretz Yisrael this summer doing internships. So it wasn't just that they felt connected because their staff has family there. And they also, many of them have cousins. They have those cousins that they're not really in touch with, or that cousin, you know, so there's that sense of what can I be doing? Cause this is really who I am, right? This is all, we're all a part of this. And taking ownership, you know, that Maor actually had prepared, Rabbi Gershenfeld prepared some sheets for us to use with our students after October 7th, you know, we needed, you know, just again, part of the response was, how can we help the students process, and not just process, but do. We had an achrayas, right? The same way that our children's schools are saying Tehillim, and our little ones learn Tehillim by heart, and they're so little, but they know. What can we do? What's our part as educators and as their mentors? And so we tried to talk to them about, you know, a three-tiered approach, right? There's three pillars, you know, help them pray if they wanted to pray, and whether it was formal or informal, and action, calls to action, and chesed, right? And volunteering their time or their money, and learning Torah. So, you know, all of those things, just plugging in and connecting to their Judaism more. And that really did help people. That was like a very helpful framework, you know, because people are looking for a plan, for something to do, for a way to channel their feelings. And Baruch Hashem, like I said, our students and Jews in general have been channeling our emotions, which are loaded, and generally, you know, overwhelmingly, and with positivity and love and you know, peace in a peaceful way. But still, we want to make sure that we're channeling those feelings and doing something with them. So I think that that is a really important takeaway for them to, you know, understand, you know, their connection to their Judaism. So there was another protest that was planned for yesterday, and a student told me that a bunch of Jewish students got out to this big area where the students are allowed to use the chalk. They can't use it all over the place, but this one area that had previously had all this hate speech and anti-Israel, all that stuff, calls for intifada, and this group of students went out there early in the morning, literally at the crack of dawn, and just covered it in pro-Israel, pro-Jewish, positive speech. So that way, when those who were going to protest went out there, to, you know, to spread their hate and spew negativity, they were welcomed, so to speak, with all this you know, beautiful artwork from our Jewish students. So again, it was done in a peaceful way, and I think honestly, I got a big kick out of it. I thought it was brilliant. So.
It's so amazing, like, the root of the Jewish people all over the world is that we're people of kindness and peace. And, like is it just in our genes that we all know that we're not going to be reacting the way, the same way that the, you know, pro-Palestinians are reacting? It's pretty amazing, the unity that we have and the agreement that we all have.
And it's such a, I feel like it's such a Jewish response to go and just, like, to go just prevent it, just, like, figure out a workaround. Like, oh, okay, well, we're just going to do this instead.
Yeah, that was very clever. So,
Yiddish cup.
Exactly. So as we close, it's interesting. I saw an ad recently. I don't know if it was Why You Were Turo, but a very well-timed ad promoting the importance of, you know, having a safe university that's all Jewish as a safe haven. So that it's a very, you know, it's a very fascinating, you know, that there are Jewish colleges available to students. I'd love to hear, Mariel and Parting, what your thoughts are about the future of Jewish college students on secular college campuses.
So I think that, I think students and parents need to really think hard about where they're sending their kids to school, where, you know, you have students who are currently in some of these universities. Do they want to continue there? I think there have been a few that have pulled out. There was, you know, some people pulled out because they truly didn't feel safe. There was somebody, I think, from Columbia, an Israeli student that was attacked. So, but that's really the exception. Most people have stayed where they are and they're trying to respond. You know, I think that they really need to think really hard about where they're sending their kids. And of course they have, because that's what parents do. And that's what Jewish parents do, is we do our due diligence. But this dormant, you know, anti-Semitism, you know, that's, you know, came to the surface. It's been there, you know, and I think that for some people, you know, they maybe don't look at themselves as being anti-Semitic. They just really feel that they're upset with how Israel's handling this, who are on the other side. But I think that there is, unfortunately, a lot more anti-Semitism than we wanted to recognize. And, you know, in the world, even people themselves didn't realize that they had it inside, I don't think. And so now it kind of came to the surface. And I think that people need to think, where they, what environments are they going to send their kids to? And what environment will they themselves feel safe in? You know, big donors pulled their funding out. And that's, you know, that's one of the best things that they could be doing, besides for just expressing their disapproval, is putting their money where their mouth is and saying, we're not going to put our money here. So I think that there is, I can't remember the name, but somebody from Penn did that. Make them sorry for not handling things properly, and let them know that if they don't get it together, that they're going to lose more funding, right? The response from, like, those big firms to the students at Harvard. So, you know, letting students know what's not acceptable. But the truth is that we have seen at certain universities a huge lack of a response. And I think people need to take that very seriously. Like, that should not be ignored just because these schools have a good reputation. I think it's really, really important, because when this is Bezos Hashem, when this is done, and, you know, obviously we all hope that we're all in Eretz Yisrael on the other side of this. But in the event that this is part of the Gula process, and that it's not, you know, this is the part of the tzmicha along the way, and this settles down, what's going to be, you know, what's going to be when everything kind of gets quiet again, and it gets, like, a little bit, you know, kind of under the radar? But, you know, you have to realize that it's still there. So people need to be responsible about that. And the truth is, who feels more threatened on campuses? Those who are more overtly Jewish, right? Mm-hmm. Those who, and some students, you know, like you've probably heard, didn't feel comfortable wearing their Jewish, their jewelry. You know, even at the protest, they mentioned this, or people like using different names when they took an Uber, you know, things like that. Some of our students actually said this is how they felt when they were heading to our Shabbaton. They didn't want to use their names. Or students said after the protest, I'm taking the Jewish star out of my shirt again, which is their way of saying I'm feeling connected, right? Our kids are walking around with their tzitzis out and their yarmulkes, and, you know, and Baruch Hashem, we feel very proud and wouldn't have it any other way. But for them, on the campuses, this is their way of expressing their, not just solidarity, but their Jewish pride. And they should be able to do that in a comfortable way, in a safe way. And if they would be applying to a camp college where they don't feel that they can do that, then I think that there's a real problem there. You know, it's obviously another conversation, just what's going on college campuses, and, you know, what that environment is for a student who wants to be growing Jewishly, or for a student who is coming in observant, and how to maintain that. But, you know, that's a separate conversation. But it's certainly very, very important for students to realize, you know, how important it is to be in an environment where they obviously can feel safe, and where there's a strong Jewish community. That's also really, really important. It's not enough to just say, well, I'm super strong in my connection to Judaism, Israel, so on. The Jewish community piece is huge. And that's what draws a lot of students to Maryland, and obviously to some of the other student campuses that have a big presence.
Wow. Well, what you're doing to provide that community is so inspiring. And Hashem should give you, Mariel, continued chizuk and strength to deal with this matzav, of course, as an individual, which we're all doing, but to have the strength to continue to guide, inspire, educate your students. It's been such a pleasure to have you on DMC. Thank you for making the time for us.
Thank you. This has been a pleasure for me and a treat. Thank you.
All right, well, this episode has given me a lot of food for thought. First of all, I found it very validating. Rifki and I were just discussing before we started recording, as we were setting up, like, I feel like at this point in the war, like with the hostages being released, right? And like seeing the videos, it has totally struck me differently. So much more real, seeing these children being reunited with their parents. I mean, I don't know. I'm like really trying to figure out my consumption right now.
I'm a mess.
Yeah, it's and that's stages of war, you know, like we can't anticipate any of this, but we were just saying how hard it's been. And then hearing Mariel talk, just sort of mirroring, our experiences of feeling, just troubled and you know, not living as optimally as we'd like to be functioning was really validating.
Yeah.
I liked hearing that from her. I'm also just so amazed the work that she does and the place of strength that she has to come from to be able to support other people going through all of what we're all going through together. You know, it's one thing like to be, you know, struggling independently and then, okay, so you have to take care of your kids, you have to show up to work, but like your job is to be providing, you know, strong Jewish community and emotional support and religious support is like, to me, like these are our heroes. Really plug in that Maor campaign because they're running a campaign. I mean, like these Jewish people and these Jewish students and the people that are supporting them so deserve our support. So I'm
absolutely
impressed with that.
It is beyond admirable. It is amazing. And the work that they're doing is incredibly important.
So important. And our children who are on campus are so vulnerable right now. So Hashem should bless them. One more thing I just wanted to share that I was struck by, a little thing. She said, she sometimes will get alerts about like saying Shema, you know, and sometimes like it will just pop up on her screen and she'll be in the middle of meeting with a student. And then she invites the student if she likes, say, you know, at this time, 12 o'clock, I always join this international Shema movement. Would you like to join me to say Shema? And that just struck me as like, she's the real deal. It's not like doing Kiruv. It's just, this is who she is. Like she's very special, very growth oriented, very connected to Hashem or Judaism and Yiddishkeit in Israel. And it just sort of like just by being herself must overflow and her students must be, you know, beneficiaries of that, and very much appreciate that about her.
We're very lucky to have her, and we're lucky that she was able to come on to the podcast.
Yes.
The some of the things that she had mentioned, that Mariel had mentioned, that really resonated with me was, I wonder how many times we've said resonated over the course of this podcast. I'm just sorry, tangential, but just the power of the achdus, that feeling that we are all one body, that Am Yisrael is one body, and when one part is affected, we are all affected. and about how, you know, that's more than just an intellectual exercise.
Yeah.
But we are all really feeling it. And to watch it be felt for like the first time, to be awakened.
Yeah, that was powerful. She used this word like it was like a visceral moment. All of a sudden it just became clear. Like we all felt it all together. And
One big entity, you know? Mm-hmm. And just like talk and to hear her talk about the way that they shifted their programming, and like, you know, that we all, this is like, I guess, continuing along the same line, but they were all one unit and we were all just collectively shifted, you know, as a nation, no matter what business we're in, no matter what field we're in, you know, everyone is just shifting their focus, shifting, you know, the way that we're functioning or not functioning, you know, everything has just, it's a huge shift, the repercussions of which I'm sure we'll continue to feel for years and years to come. And then she also shared some words that, that described kind of how the students have felt since October 7th. And it made such a, she shared this with us after we stopped recording, but I just wrote some of them down as she was saying them, because I felt like it really encompassed how we've all been feeling, which is overwhelmed, in pain, proud, motivated, confused. And it basically was just like this list of adjectives that are just like up and down and up and down and up and down, and just like this whirlwind that we are all in the center of, you know. Hashem should just give us strength as we keep moving forward.
I mean. Here's this episode's takeaway. Do you know a Jewish student on a secular college campus right now? They could use our support. Reach out, send a text, or make a phone call and show them that you care and you're there for them.
Finally, we would like to tell you about Town Appliance's installation services. So Town Appliance offers various options on basic hookups, removing packaging materials, and the removal of freestanding appliances in certain areas. Because, yes, you cannot put a fridge in a place where there is already a fridge. I guess you could have two fridges, but, you know, decorative fridge is not a look that anyone wants to go for. To check if these additional services are available in your area, simply enter your zip code at the product page. You can see the pricing options on the delivery and installation page of their website. And, of course, you can always feel free to give Town Appliance a call and speak with one of their helpful customer service representatives. You'll find all that information in our show notes.
Thank you again to our episode sponsor, Amudim. Amudim is running a 36-hour worldwide live stream event on December 17th and 18th. You'll want to visit unitetoheal.com to hear from inspiring speakers and performers, all uniting to support the incredible life-saving work of Amudim. Rise up and respond with your support so we can heal together, because we need it more than ever. We also want to tell you a little bit more about some of the other initiatives Amudim has put in place since October 7th. So remember the charter flights when the war broke out?
Oh my gosh, it feels like such a long time ago.
So long ago. Well, Amudim was behind a number of those chartered flights to ensure the safe return of 800 Americans to their homes. They just jumped to action. And these flights were not only instrumental in bringing citizens back to safety, but also facilitated the transportation of 573 reserve soldiers and 800 duffel bags of supplies back to Israel. They also chartered 5 cargo flights, transporting nearly 100 tons of supplies and equipment to Israel. Amudim is also committed to mental health education, so they created a special unit in response to the tragedy of October 7th and the ongoing war to provide students with skills to process their feelings and emotions in a healthy manner. And it was distributed to 90 schools worldwide.
Amazing.
So Amudim has always been on the front lines of crisis and has stepped up to provide tremendous avenues of support to Klal Yisrael all in the past and most certainly now during this challenging time. Amudim's worldwide needs include supporting individuals in 66 countries with over 17,000 total cases and almost 485,000 crisis calls. Please step up to unite with Amudim and support the crucial work they do for Am Yisrael. You can find the link to Amudim's Stand United campaign, December 17th and 18th, in our show notes.
Okay, listeners, we have been waiting a long time to release our next episode. It is called Food as Fuel with Esty Asher. It was slated for release originally right after Simchas Torah. We were so organized. We recorded it during the Aseres Mei Tshuva, and we were like all proud of ourselves that we were like on top of the game.
Oh my gosh.
Obviously, and then everything changed. So now we feel like we're going to, that it could be good to be released right after Hanukkah with the intention that we all need to take care of ourselves and quite possibly more than ever during this stressful time. How we feed ourselves and our mindset surrounding food is essential to that effort. And we hope that everyone thoroughly enjoys splurging this Hanukkah season and then come back after Hanukkah for some interesting insights on quote unquote getting back on track, as well as better understanding the role food plays in our daily lives.
We always love hearing from our DMC listeners. Thank you to those of you who emailed us and private messaged us on Instagram about our last few episodes, which have been devoted to the situation in Erzsistral. The feedback really warms our hearts. Our email is dmcthepodcast@gmail.com. And please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review Deep Meaningful Conversations wherever you get your podcasts. See you next episode.